Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. In Britain, after the summer season and the grouse shooting season and the back to school season, we have the conference season. But seriously, why do parties hold conferences? Apart from the karaoke opportunities, obviously, they presumably cost a lot to put on. So what is the benchmark of success? And if you could advise Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer on how to make their conference a success this year, what would you tell them? Psychotherapy is about analysing past behaviour to make sense of the present. So to help me psychoanalyse party conferences in general, and perhaps to foretell what will happen in the ones due to happen, I am delighted to welcome to my couch someone who has been attending, or therefore should that be addicted, to party conferences for over 20 years, James Kirkup, who is partner of Appella Advisors and a former political editor and think tank director. Hello, James.
Good morning.
So I've laid your secrets bare. You go to party conferences all the time. Do you like going to party conferences? You've been to so many?
No. I've been going to conferences since I think 2001, probably doing two or three or sometimes four conferences a year. I once totted it up and worked out that I'd probably spent something getting on 6 months of my life at party conferences at all. And I then remembered that actually burglars get less time than that. So I've done a lot of them. I don't really enjoy them, to be honest, but they're fascinating. They're absolutely fascinating events. And I think I think looking at them through the psychological lens is a brilliant idea. So it's a much better idea than seeing them as political events, because they are psychological and emotional events more than political ones, I think.
Well, that must be true. I mean, there's the old joke about two psychiatrists who are walking down the corridor. They pass a third psychiatrist who says, "Good morning." And when they're out of earshot from him, the other psychiatrist turns to his friend and says, "I wonder what he meant by that." And so I have this sense of party conferences always talking to each other, but not really. What are they talking about? What are they obsessed by? And what do they really mean by what they say?
Yes,
do they well, really mean I mean, what they say? And do they trust each other? Do you get a sense of that? The conversation.
Enormously. So the thing you've got to remember about conferences is that they've changed enormously in that they used to be gatherings of the mass membership of the political parties. But because we don't have mass membership political parties anymore, we have pretty small parties. And because the ordinary members, by and large, don't go to conferences because he's got time and money and inclination to take a week off in autumn and go to what's now an increasingly expensive city, because they've moved from the seaside resorts where you can get a cheap hotel and a nice day by the sea to the big cities, Birmingham, Liverpool, Manchester, where corporates you get nice hotels. So the nature of the people has changed. And what that means is that they are primarily attended by people who are there because they are interested in what other people are doing. And this is the sort of the defining experience of conference for me, I think. It's full of people who are interested in thinking about what other people are doing somewhere else. You almost get a sense that everybody thinks the conference is just somewhere else. It's in the next room. It's in the room around the corner. So the standard conversation, I have a conference, everybody bumps it. So what's the mood? What do you make of it? And you're then trying to give a verdict on the mood, the tone, the psychological status of a group of people who are the majority of whom are not directly involved in the political party. So you're trying to sort of gauge the mood of a bunch of MPs, possibly a small number of activists and members, and some advisors who are probably in a hotel room, sleep deprived, half drunk, careering through the week, without something disastrously wrong happening, and trying to land some key messages in the hope that you're going to get out. So you're going to reach outside the bubble to the electorate that frankly doesn't even know this conference is going on.
But that's the extraordinary thing. As you say, very few people outside of the political bubble are that interested in it and paying attention. But the people who are there are so obsessed with it, but they're thinking that it's happening in the room next door. They themselves don't feel like it's happening to them, that it's happening at one remove, and therefore they're desperately trying to find out where it's happening. It's like Alice through the looking glass, really.
The conference is always just, is always somewhere else. It's just the important stuff, unless you are literally in the room, in the leader's suite or wherever it is. You're always slightly wondering, is there something going on somewhere else? It's a sort of collective experience of FOMO, I suppose. All the cliches are true, that the standard conference conversation usually consists of meeting someone and then looking over their shoulder while you talk to them in the hope of spotting somebody more interesting or important to talk to, and they're doing the same thing to you. It's a fairly, it's an odd experience, predicated on looking for somebody else or something else somewhere else. You can learn things about the parties because their cultures and their prevailing ideas do still come through regardless.
Even though there are very few policy announcements that seem to have any kind of massive impact. I suppose people talk about George Osborne's threat to cut inheritance tax, possibly shocking Gordon Brown into not calling an election. That's quite a seismic interpretation of that year's conference season. But there seemed to be very little movement in the polls every year, very few policy announcements that stick. So what is happening?
You're right. That's probably the most consequential conference I think I remember. And you're right. Lots of the announcements that are made don't really add up to very much. Partly because the parties have said the Conservatives have never really had party democracy. So what the conference doesn't decide anything. There are no votes or decisions made at conference for Conservatives. There's a little bit of decision making for the Labour Party, but less and less these days. Lib Dems still really properly make their policy at conference and take great delight in defeating the leadership and forcing policy on them. They're a different beast slightly. Even though the actual sort of decision making, policy making function of conferences probably diminishes over time, like I say, the character of the party still persists. And the character, almost the sort of the ethic, the ethos of the of them. So this year, the Conservatives are, they're 20 points behind the polls. They're 13 years in office. I mean, every indicator says they're going to lose. They're heading for defeat. They'll actually have quite a nice time, because Conservatives tend to enjoy their conference. The worst sin in Conservative circles, I always find, is seriousness. So you're taking the whole thing to heart would be very non-you in Tory circles. So yes, they'll sit around and they'll talk about doom and gloom, and quite a lot of them are already thinking about who's going to run for leader after Rishi and all the rest of it. And then they'll go to the bar and have a drink. It'll be quite jolly. So there'll be a bit of gallows humour to it. So the aesthetic of the Tories, you mustn't take it too seriously. Mustn't take it to heart. The Labour Party, on the other hand, probably has the opposite problem. Labour probably tends to take things a little bit too seriously. Partly it's down to the fact that there's somehow a sense that, we mustn't enjoy ourselves too much while social and economic injustice goes unresolved.
Do you think they're still haunted by Sheffield? Do you think there's that sense that they just don't want to ever look like they're taking anything for granted in the way that Neil looked like he was taking something for granted back then?
I think Sheffield is now a long period. Sheffield is a long time ago.
There will be people at those party conferences who weren't even born when that happened.
I regularly find myself in there. I occasionally find myself in rooms of people who weren't born when Tony Blair was first elected. That's the passage of time for you. I think somewhere buried in the Labour psyche, there is the idea that the Tory government is the default setting for Britain. And actually, I mean, historically, that's largely been true. They are aware that a Labour government is an elected Labour government is a rare thing. Labour almost has the opposite problem. It's an excess of seriousness. They're sort of almost afraid to enjoy themselves. I think a little bit of that is because it's the nature of the party. Labour conversations are often about social economic injustice, and therefore it's a bit jarring to go from talking about poverty and unfairness to then have a nice drink and an ease up. But also, I think it's the fear of failure.
The
Sheffield rally experience, not many of them remember it now.
Do you think that this year above all else is going to be so stage managed so that nothing can go wrong?
Yeah, no, I think it will be a very disciplined and probably therefore not enormously fun conference, because this is the conference before an election. They're 20 points ahead in the polls. The only way is down, they know that the next year is an awful lot of scrutiny, a lot of pressure, a lot of questioning of Keir Starmer, of their policy positions. And it's very interesting that even people who bluntly privately aren't massively convinced by Keir Starmer, who don't necessarily like his agenda, they're all being very loyal because they could win. And buried in the Labourist psyche, as is the idea that Tory government is the default setting for Britain, and therefore it requires something extraordinary to shift that default. And so they always think that essentially, all else being equal, they will lose. Labour is sort of almost sort of, whereas the Tories, have the opposite assumption. The Tories tend to assume that they assume that the default is meant to win. They're surprised, they're kind of surprised when they lose. Mm-hmm. Labour expects to lose and is surprised when it wins.
Well, that's a really interesting thing, because human beings are really shaped by stories, the stories that we tell ourselves and each other about our lives and about our place in the world. So what do you think the narratives are going to be of this conference season? Because you can't have Labour coming out and saying something like that. We think the Tories are a default setting, therefore we've got to play it safe in order to get elected. What do you think they will say instead? What will the Labour say? What will the Conservatives say? And is anyone paying attention to what the Lib Dems have said?
I thought Lib Dems could well matter insofar as it's likely that Labour will have a small or even negative majority, in which case Lib Dem MPs become very important. So their position on house building and NIMBYism could well matter. Don't rule them out. Narratives. You're right. Labour can't say, God, we're scared of blowing this. Therefore, we're going to say safety first. I think they're going to try and pretend that they're enthusiastic about Keir Starmer. They've got a bold and exciting leader. You look at I've got the conference program, the handbook for the Labour conference. It's got this soft focus shot of Keir Starmer looking moodily into the distance in a sort of. I think he's trying to look like Gordon Brown. I think,
Gordon Brown has his ear, doesn't he? That's the dimension of that.
And you see that's back to the Labour psychology. Labour is much. The Labour Party likes Gordon Brown more than it likes Tony Blair. Tony Blair won 3 elections. Gordon Brown lost 1, but he did it. But he lost. With passion and socialist fervor and commitment to economic and social justice, and so he held his principles. So if the two of them were to walk onto a stage at a Labour conference, I'm pretty sure Gordon Brown would still get a bigger ovation than Tony Blair. Mm. Starmer has recently started talking to Tony Blair again, but in their heart and soul, I think the Labour Party still thinks Gordon Brown is more. Is a better example of a Labour leader than Tony Blair. Like I said, they'll try and show some enthusiasm for Keir Starmer. It's not really, he's a decent, solid enough man, but he's not. They don't really believe he's the second coming. The Tories, I don't know how. Again, there's a sort of similar thing going on there. Most of them don't think Rishi Sunak is amazing. They can see he's a bit dispassionate and calculating machine. He's not a rabble rouser, but they're quite keen to believe that actually he hates net zero and he hates wokery, and actually maybe he's secretly sort of proper right-wing Tory like us. I don't know how many of them will want to subscribe to that, that illusion.
Well, as you said earlier, it might very well not be a conference about the Tory party. It could end up being an unofficial hustings for the next contention. So they're going to leapfrog this election. The election is done and dusted as far as they're concerned. They're having their 2024 conference in 2023.
Yeah, no, the dissonance of simultaneously pretending in public that you are fighting all out to win the next general election under Rishi Sunak, and you look forward to serving in his cabinet for the next decade, while also making it painfully clear that you are a candidate to succeed him when he fails at the next election, is, I mean, most human beings would find that quite difficult. I think politicians generally sort of absorb. I always remember back many, many years ago, during the IDS years, leading the Conservative Party in Blackpool, a member of IDS's shadow cabinet, I'm going to be polite and not name him, walked into the press room after a speech and said, literally just to the entire room, sort of, 100 odd journalists, said, well, on the record, speaking as a member of the shadow cabinet, I would say that speech was magnificent, triumphant, and he will lead us on to victory. Speaking off the record, and you can quote me as one shadow cabinet minister said, that was a total disaster. The man's an idiot and has to go. And literally, he said it in one sentence he was at the same time two people. He could be two people. He could have his public persona and his off the record one. And there was no glimmer. There was no pause between the switch from one story to the other.
Do you think that's what the public would love? That actually, if the conferences could do anything for the public, it would be, could we see the real politician? Not that, as you say, two-faced, the capacity to inhabit, two personas. But actually, people are hoping that the conference might offer opportunities for things to go wrong, for people to say the wrong thing, for the mask to slip. That actually, that's why non-politicos watch it.
I mean, this is the only bit of the conference that ever gets sort of beyond the bubble, gets any sort of real play. Is the leader's speech, and the amount of effort that goes into the leader's speech, which is going to be ultimately clipped and cut down into a 3-minute package on the news, and so much of it goes into the moment where you almost see the change of register. It's usually about sort of a third, somewhere in the middle third of the speech. You can see this, so there's a pause, the change of register. No conference, and then go into personal anecdote now. I will now read out words that my team have written to you, which will demonstrate to you my inner soul and passion. And this will be written up as the most personal speech ever. And what animates me and what moves me and why I'm here today, conference, is because of my lifelong passion for insert issues here. And it's that attempt to try, the attempt to demonstrate authenticity, to say I will give you a glimpse of my soul, which is obviously nothing of the sort. It's been very well crafted and thought through by a large team of people who have been designing the soul that we're going to glimpse. Those moments, I think, you can probably hear I'm slightly cynical of those. I don't know how often you ever get politicians accidentally showing who they are. In a funny way, I thought the most revealing moment of recent time. Do you remember the Theresa May speech when the letters were falling off? The letters were falling off and she was coughing. I thought that, for better or for worse, you kind of saw Theresa May as she really was at that moment. Other politicians in those circumstances would have said something agile and nimble and made a joke of it and moved on. Boris Johnson would have made the whole thing hilarious. Letters falling off and protests. Boris Johnson would have made that into a comedy show. That would have been wonderful. Theresa May just couldn't
observe. She just plowed on, didn't she? She demonstrated a particular side of her personality.
I will keep going. And I think, I think a lot of people are watching that. Obviously they didn't think, God, she's a fearsome leader and, fully common, but they probably thought, God, there's some drive there. That's the commitment. Because most people are scared of public speaking. And you think, what must it be like being on that stage and everything goes wrong? And she just kept going. She just plows on. And I saw that, I thought that was a sort of revealing character moment. Obviously, not, you know, you can't script that. But the rest, all the sort of, you know, let me tell you about when I was growing up in my insert parents here house business something, and I always remember that. Yeah, I always remember that. Yeah, that moment when he said to me, "Hang on, what was it? Hang on, the interview's gone. I can't remember what my father said to me." Honestly,
well, leaving your cynicism aside, can we just stay with that Theresa May coughing moment, because it reminds me of something else I wanted to ask you, but. From a psychological point of view, you know, if somebody has got a frog in their throat, if they do develop a sort of repeated cough at a particular time of their life, and psychosomatically you ask, why now? What is it this person can't bear to say? What is it they feel they're not saying? I'm very struck by the fact that, and I guess this happens a lot, you know, at the beginning of term, you get lots of children coming home from coughs and colds. Freshers at university all go down with glandular fever because they're, you know, not looking after themselves and snogging too much. And I'm just wondering, everybody who comes back from the conference always has a conference lurgy. They're coughing, they're spluttering. And again, I'm wondering how much of that is psychosomatic. Is conference an ordeal? Is it those moments where you can't really say what you want to say? You have to, you know, your things get stuck in your throat and you can't really say what you really mean, and journalists can't write what they really want to write. Is it all just a big act, a big charade? And is that why the public can't, you know, you're cynical about it, but I think for a generation of people who've been brought up on looking at reality TV and whose backstories are authentic and whose aren't, whether it's Strictly or Big Brother, we can spot inauthenticity a mile away, and that's why the conferences are doomed.
I think that's a really good point. And yes, I mean, it is a sort of attempt to construct a collective illusion, back to my cynicism. Lots of the announcements that are made are, you know, have been put together for the sake of the conference. As I said, the speeches have been written to try and you portray a certain image. You're right. All that is a large part of the reason why they don't reach the public. I mean, never mind the fact that the content is, you know, there's all a question of whether or not people are interested enough in politics and and policy. But I think I think the contrivance of it is relatively is pretty off-putting, but equally, I mean, I can see, you know, I know why it happens, why the control, why you construct the narrative and plan the story, because the alternative is chaos. And and that's a large part of what the job of the media is, going around looking for chaos, trying to find people who are, you know, the highest prize at conference for a reporter, which I used to be, is to find a senior politician saying something off script. At a fringe meeting, at a drinks reception, something that departs, something that unravels that careful narrative that the leadership has put together, because that's much more interesting. Watching the show go wrong. That's interesting. It's like the play that goes wrong. We like the idea of things going off the rails. At an entertainment level, hopefully things will go wrong at the other conferences this year.
From an entertainment point of view, if nothing else, exactly, we do want things to all go tits up. But finally, if you had to, leaving your cynicism aside again, that there is this script that gets written for them, if you had to say to Rishi and Keir Starmer, obviously Ed Davies already had his go, so maybe it's too late for you to advise him. But in a soundbite, what would your advice to Rishi be, and what would your advice to Keir Starmer be to make an impact, to cut through all of our cynicism, and for people to say, my God, I think they've now got it in the bag?
I'm not sure that any conference can do that in a positive sense. I think it's very much downside risk. I think you can do yourself a lot of harm at conference. I'm not sure it is possible to positively transform your fortunes. Obviously, there is the sort of West Wing inspired sort of sepia tinted idea that maybe, you know what, one year we get a leader who will just before he steps on the stage, take the speech test and then rip it all up and say, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to walk out. I'm just going to ad lib. I'm just going to tell it like it is. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to talk honestly. It's like, yeah, let me tell you, obviously they wrote me a speech where I'm supposed to say that GDP is going to go up next year. You know, it might not, because actually life is difficult and, you know, we're doing our best and maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. And, you know, I'm supposed to say the other guy on the other side, he's a terrible guy and his party will destroy the country. They're probably not bad guys. They're okay. They've got slightly different ideas than the ones we've got. I think we're better, but, you know, they're okay too. I'm going to let you say, oh, yeah, there's an idea of just, if a politician sort of, you know, just cut loose and was, you know, sort of, yeah, talk like a normal human being, then everyone would love them. But I'm not even sure that's true. I think that would be you get a 24-hour bump of, oh, that was interesting, yeah, and then a quick row about, oh, it was all scripted anyway, and oh gosh, hasn't he just admitted everything's terrible? And very quickly you'd have reversion to the mean. So I'm not sure any speech, any moment, any one event can fundamentally shift narratives, I'm afraid. Sorry, boring answer.
Well, not so much boring, but very dispiriting. So we approach the next party conferences with that in mind, that they're going to be very expensive and very alcohol fueled, and they're not going to change anything at all. But for now, James Kirkup, partner at Appella Advisors, thank you so much for being my guest on The Couch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all the things that help people hear about On The Couch podcast. And do tell all your friends, and even people who aren't your friends, but maybe you want them to be. This is a podcast for Reaction.